Welcome to Hallel Fellowship, found on the internet at hallel.info. That's hallel.info. We hope you are encouraged by the following recorded Bible study to look deeper into every word that proceeds from the mouth of God and how they were lived out in the life of Yeshua HaMashiach, often called Jesus the Christ.
We are in Bamidbar, also known as Numbers, chapter 1. We go to Numbers, chapter 1, through chapter 4. Bamidbar in the Wilderness is the title of the book, which sounds much better than Numbers, doesn't it? More interesting, right? Unless you're an accountant, that's true. Accountants prefer the numbers side of things. So this is a little bit repetitive, so I'm not going to read the entire passage because a lot of things have to do with no shocking number there, with numbers. You're part of this, all right? So Numbers chapter 1. Is that thing up? Oh, good deal. Perfect. Jehovah spoke to Moses in the wilderness of Sinai in the tent of meeting on the first day of the second month, the second year after the exodus from the land of Egypt, saying, take a census of the entire assembly of the children of Israel according to their families, according to their father's household, by number of the names, every male according to their head count, from 20 years of age and up. Everyone who is out to the legion, who goes out to the legion in Israel, you shall count them according to their legions, you and Aaron. And with you shall be one man from each tribe, a man who is a leader of his father's household. These are the names of men who shall stand with you. For Reuben, Eleazar, son of Shedeur. For Simeon, Shlumiel, son of Zurishaddai. For Judah, Nashon, son of Aminadab. For Issachar, Nethaneel, son of Zuar. For Zebulun, Eliav, son of Helon. For the children of Joseph, for Ephraim, Elishama, son of Amihud. For Manasseh, Gamaliel, son of Pedazur. For Benjamin, Abidan, son of Gedoni. For Dan, Ahizir, son of Amishaddai. For Asher, Pagiel, son of Elchron. For Gad, Adisaph, son of Duel. For Naphtali, Achira, son of Enan. These the ones summoned by the assembly, the leaders of their father's tribes, they are the heads of the Israel's thousands. Moses and Aaron took these men who had been designated by their names. They gathered together the entire assembly on the first of the second month. They established the genealogy according to their families, according to their father's household, by number of the names, from 20 years of age and up, according to their head count. As Jehovah had commanded Moses, he counted them in the wilderness of Sinai. Okay, here's the numbers part. These are the sons of Reuben, firstborn of Israel, their offspring according to their families, according to their father's household, by number of the names, according to their head count. Every male from 20 years of age and up, everyone who goes out to the legion, their count for the tribe of Reuben, 46,500. The sons of Simeon, their offspring, according to their families, according to their father's household, its number, by the number of the names, according to their head count. Every male from 20 years of age and up, everyone who goes out to the legion, their count for the tribe of Simeon, 59,300. The sons of Gad, their offspring, according to their families, according to their father's house, by number of their names, from 20 years of age and up, everyone who goes out to the legion, their count for the tribe of Gad, 45,650. The sons of Judah, their offspring, according to their families, according to their father's household, by number of their names, from 20 years of age and up, everyone who goes out to the legion, their count for the tribe of Judah, 74,600. For the sons of Issachar, their offspring, according to their families, according to their father's household, by number of their names, from 20 years of age and up, everyone who goes out the legion, their count for the tribe of Issachar, 54,400. The sons of Zebulun, their offspring, according to their families, according to their father's household, by number of their names, from 20 years of age and up, everyone who goes out to the legion, their count for the tribe of Zebulun, 57,400. For the sons of Judah, they're for the sons of Ephraim, their offspring according to their families, according to their father's household, by number of their names, from 20 years of age and up, everyone who goes out to the legion, their count for the tribe of Ephraim, 40,500. For the sons of Manasseh, their offspring according to their families, according to their father's household, by number of their names, from 20 years of age and up, everyone who goes out to the legion, their count for the tribe of Manasseh, 32,200. For the sons of Benjamin, their offspring, according to their families, according to their father's household, by number of the names from 20 years of age and up, everyone who goes out to the legion, their count for the tribe of Benjamin, 35,400. For the sons of Dan, their offspring, according to their families, according to their father's household, by number of the names from 20 years of age and up, everyone who goes out to the legion, their count for the tribe of Dan, 62,700. The sons of Asher, their offspring, according to their families, according to their father's household, by numbers and names from 20 years of age and up, everyone who goes out to the legion, their count for the tribe of Asher, 41,500. The sons of Naphtali, their offspring, according to their families, according to their father's household, by number of the names from 20 years of age and up, everyone who goes out to the legion, their count for the tribe of Naphtali, 53,400. These the counts that Moses, Aaron, and the leaders counted 12 men. One man for his father's household were they. These were all the countings of the children of Israel, according to their father's households, from 20 years of age and up. Everyone who goes out to the legion in Israel, all their counties were 603,550. The Levites, according to their father's tribe, were not counted among them. Jehovah spoke to Moses, saying, "But you shall not count the tribe of Levi. You shall not take a census of them among the children of Israel. Now you appoint the Levites over the tabernacle of the testimony, over all its utensils, and over everything that belongs to it. They shall carry the tabernacle and all its utensils, and they shall minister to it. They shall encamp around the tabernacle. When the tabernacle journeys, the Levites shall take it down. And when the tabernacle encamps, the Levites shall erect it. An alien who approaches shall die. The children of Israel shall encamp, every man at his camp, every man at his banner, according to their legions. The Levites shall encamp around the tabernacle of the testimony, so that there shall be no wrath upon the assembly of the children of Israel. And the Levites shall safeguard the watch of the tabernacle of the testimony." The children of Israel did everything that Jehovah commanded Moses. So did they do. I'm going to stop there for a minute. Yes.
So were all these people all in one place at the time of the Exodus, or did they come from all different places in Egypt?
So this is an interesting question. Many people have asked these details as far as the characteristics of the individual groups and where they all came from. And we're going to answer that question later on today in about 45 minutes or so when I get to that verse. But between now and then, you can contemplate this. So you have all the various tribes, and in this census, he's counting males from 20 years and up who are able to go out to war, so who can be part of a legion. So they are for war. So he is not counting invalids, people who are terminally ill, some serious problem that they don't have the capacity to do anything, are not counting children either. Our group military does, 18 and up. Some people sneak it at 17. But we kind of retire people from military battle relatively young. It's very, you aren't going to be a foot soldier at the age of 60. We don't do that in our country because you're physically not able to do so. But they, as far as they're concerned, if you can carry a sword, you're a warm body, you can go to war. It doesn't matter. Even if you die as a first person, at least the other guy had to spend his time killing you instead of somebody else. So if nothing else, you're there to die for no other reason. And we run across that exact problem in our Bibles in the book of Judges, when it discusses with Deborah and Barak. Because they have like 10,000 whatever of the tribes of Israel going against all these chariots. And the chariots that the Israelites go and they have, clubs and spears and pitchforks type of thing against chariots with swords and massive, military might. And the half of the Israelites are killed. But the Israelites know ahead of time, we're going to die. The job is to stand here and die anyway. And that's what they chose to do. Knowing that some people, your responsibility, like we discussed earlier with Anne brought up during prayer session, the Normandy invasion. The first wave, all new, guys. No one's going to survive this. But the goal isn't for all of us to survive. The goal is once behind us to make it through. So the first ranks know full well they're not going to make it through. They know that. So when you have people who are old, or they know they can't do a whole lot of great military might of great strength, they know, hey, it's still my job. No. So he was 20 years of age. These, of course, were males. Now, of course, it totals, I'm not going to write down every tribe's name. So it's 600 and 3,550 is the total number of males included here for each tribe. Now, this is for all, sorry, all tribes. Now, each tribe obviously breaks up in its own subgroup. Now, your question more specifically had to do with the makeup of the characteristics of the individual tribes. Were they all Israelites? Were they all from each individual tribe, all those males? Or were they a group of others from the outside? Now, when we read in the Torah they came out of Egypt, it said they came with a mixed multitude. So this is only basically a year and a month or so. A year and I think the second month? I think it's the second month. Let me double check that. It says, on the first of the second month, the second year. So this is basically a year and a month later after they leave Egypt. Well, month and a half, or whatever, about that time period. It's when this process is taking place. Oh, thank you. So we have this time period. Now, when they came out, a mixed multitude came with them, which were not just Israelites. There are many people came with them. Now, we'll discuss who those people are when we get to, but that the hint is given in Ezekiel. Oops, Ezekiel, I think it's 47, which it discusses that topic. But we'll get there later on toward the tail end of our discussion today, as far as how do you deal with these mixed multiple people in a count like this. But we'll get there. Okay, so the first chapter obviously does all these different counts of names and timing and all that great stuff. And they have inside, obviously, the encampment all around. We have this concept, which is very well established in our own religious, mental, spiritual state of being, that God is within inside of us. A part of his spirit is put on each person who follows him, right? Well, in this story, obviously, he tells the exact same instruction on a physical realm. So we know that there's a tent of testimony, which is roughly oblong or rectangular in shape as far as where the tabernacle is and all the other stuff here. I mean, all these various things. I'm going to draw this, this one, whatever. Where his little house is here, where he lives. They already built this. So this tabernacle, its tent and dwelling places where the high priest also were established, they were established a month earlier. So they've already been established. They're now in the process of going through this. All the various camps, all were surrounded around it. All the different tribes and standards. Now the ones that were physically closest to the tent itself in this region here were specifically the Levites only. So that particular tribe, they would encamp the closest to it. And of course, on the entrance side would be Aaron and Moses, but more specifically Aaron. His family dwells there. They are the entrance to this campsite, which it discusses obviously in great detail in chapter 2, discussing who camps and which region they all camp and such. We're going to go around most chapter 2 because it's very tedious, and I don't want to talk about that today. But this is the whole campsite, how it's laid out. So God intended himself to be the center of everything, the center of all the people. Wherever you were at, you could see where he was at. Just literally glance toward the middle, and that's where God's at. Now, what did it look like? Now, there's debates. So the tent looked like this or that or the thing. I don't really care. Well, I do care, but it's not so important what our opinion is, because it's just an opinion. What they do see, however, is a regular pillar of, smokish fire cloud that comes down and visits this tent on a regular basis. Anytime it comes down, Moses and Aaron, oh, God wants to talk to us. We have a council meeting today. And they go inside and they counsel for a while. They can see that event happening on a regular basis. How regular is it? How many times did it say, and the Lord spoke to Moses? That's how regular. Okay, it's pretty regular. It's a steady stream of cycle of events. Now, to me, I have my own disagreement on certain details of this, on how frequently and how that happens. But Moses and God do talk on a pretty regular basis, and that's the method which he typically uses. So they do see that event, but they may not be able to see inside, beyond the tent. And it's not really tall, yay high. Maybe if you're on a tall rock, you look inside of it. But the point is, it's tall enough you couldn't just look in and observe a thing like an auditorium. You are still, you know, level ground, relatively speaking. But you could see the smoke coming down, the cloudish black cloud coming down on a regular basis. So that's the intent. Now, everybody surrounded, this count that we just went through were males. Of course, as we all know, males are the only ones who make up people. So there's debate on the number of people, but the number typically would represent roughly 1/4 to 1/5 of the population. So it's at least 4 or 5 times that size would include the young children, their wives, the other members, the family, they'll be included in there. These are males from 20 years of age and up. So roughly you have to have at least a wife. And I know in our modern day culture, we do 2 kids per household. That is so not even close to what their culture was. Not even close. It's more likely 4 to 6 children per household because not all children survived. Pretty typically, children didn't live through growing up to being adulthood. That's one of, not the only, reason why people perceive or assume in chapter 2, when he's counting Levites, he counts Levite males from 1 month and up. None of them are younger than a month old when doing the firstborn counting, because you don't know if the child's going to survive to be a month old. So you don't know. And also, the child is dedicated or blessed at 1 month of age and up. That is the dedication service when they're to be redeemed at the temple at the meeting. So God counts the males, or counts children in particular, from a month old and up. Many of us know children used to, more free than now, die very early, sometimes a few days, a few hours old, sometimes maybe a month old or less, and many years ago. It's not so much now because we learn a lot more about sanitation and hygiene, but and other reasons as well. Anyways, that's what's going on as far as how our count is concerned. I want to point out something to you, however, as I read this section. If you jump back to Exodus chapter 30 in verse 16, there was an earlier census. I brought this up last time we talked about this topic, but I'll bring it up again just to remember. Exodus chapter 30, verse 16 discusses a similar event. Let's see here. Exodus, where is it? I don't think I have the wrong verse written down. Let's see, code numbers, for soul, the count will not be a plague, everyone takes a sense of half shekel. I apologize, this is the sixth. This is when when they're counting up all the details wrong scripture. This references as far as how you count them, and you don't count them by heads and by names. This, so I should talk about that now, actually, since we're already on this topic. So in Exodus 30:16, the instructions for counting isn't 1, 2, 3, 4, counting each, that doesn't work that way. I don't get to do that. I don't count your heads and count, okay, there are 14 people. It doesn't work that way. So the instructions given in Exodus 30, let's read that. Exodus 30, let's jump to verse 11. Jehovah spoke to Moses, saying, when you take a census of the children of Israel, according to their numbers, every man shall give Jehovah an atonement for his soul when counting them. So there shall not be a plague among them when counting them. This shall they shall give. Everyone who passes through the census, a half shekel of the sacred shekel, the shekel is 20 gerahs, half a shekel is a portion to Jehovah. Everyone who passes the census from 20 years of age and up shall give a portion of Jehovah. The wealthy should not increase, the destitute should not decrease from a half shekel. To give a portion to Jehovah to atone for your souls, you shall take the silver of the atonement for the children of Israel and give it for the work of the tent of meeting. It should be a remembrance before Jehovah for the children of Israel, for everyone to atone for your souls. So in the technique given instruction here, in the half shekel instruction, is that you don't count the heads, you count the coins. You count the coins. So in the case of this case, you would count the half shekel and say, okay, how many half shekels do we have? Doesn't matter. If Moses and Aaron are counting, so it's one per head hold, per house per head, a half shekel that's being counted per head. That's the instruction to answer your question. So in the case of counting cycles, I don't go through counting names. I might record your name. I might say you're the descendant of so-and-so. You can hear your children. I'm not counting those. I'm just recording. That's genealogy. The counting, how many are there? I count the half shekels. How many people are there in your tribe? Or in, and they count the half shekels. That's technique. Now, in the case when we run across this a duplicate problem that happened with the King David, when he counted the people, he wanted to count his military might. How many people could he go to war? They did it for tax purposes, for war reasons, or how many people they need to allocate resources. Our government actually does this every 10 years. They're doing it next year, to 2020. Every 10 years, they count all the citizens and non-citizens, all the humans for that matter, in our country, and they do that for allocation for resources, for representatives, all that stuff they do. Statistical runs, that kind of thing. King David did not follow this instruction, the half shekel rule. He followed the counting heads. Is it, and you remember what happened? Yeah. To recall, you remember there was, God wasn't pleased, but not only was God not pleased, Joab, David's top commander, told him, don't do this. This is wrong. But he didn't listen. Yes.
I feel like you're going to get to it, but why would God send a plague if they didn't count the Israelites the right way? I mean, I know he's Almighty God and he can basically do whatever he wants, but is there a rhyme to the reason?
That's an interesting question. And I can only give you my opinion about it. All right. So I'm going to give you my opinion, which isn't really worth much, but that's all I can give you. So in the case of the counting, we'll write this up here, the counting for David, when he counted the number of people he had. Of course, the military might, he wanted the soldiers, know how many soldiers he had, how big was his army, all that kind of stuff. Joab gave him a warning. So may God make your blessing in the people of Israel, I think it was 100 times than what it is now, but don't count them. So Joab's warning was very key in that. So Joab told him, don't count, that you will get, if you don't count, you could be, I think he said 100, maybe he said 10, but it was a large number more. I'm gonna write 100, but forgive me if I've got the wrong number. As 100 times more if you don't count them. But he chose to count them. So as a result, what did God do? I'm going to reduce the count. Right, hit the smite button. Don't count them. I don't remember the exact number he came up with. I believe it's recorded in 1 Samuel, but I've forgotten the verse and chapter. I didn't write that down. But David had counted many. It was so many hundreds of thousands or millions, whatever it was. And then God said, okay, because you did this, now you have an exact number. Now I'm going to shrink this number. Bummer. You don't want to be on the receiving end of the shrinking, do you? And David was given options, okay? You want the pestilence, plagues, foreign invaders, whatever. He said, God, you're more merciful, so I'll choose you. And of course, 3 days later, there's tens of thousands are now dead. So David's number, his military might, just shrank down to be of insignificant compared to what it was before. What was the purpose of God doing this? They weren't his people. David's counting his own as if, hey, these were my people. They're mine. Because when you name something, when you count it, say, this is what I have. Oops. Look what I control. Oops. When you name it, Adam, he named the animals. What does that mean? He had dominion over them. And God said, name them. God didn't name them. Adam did. What was God telling him? You have dominion over these things. You name it, you control it. It's yours to dominate or to control. In the case of David, he has counted them. Look what I have. And God said, they're not yours. Well, however many were healed. And to demonstrate that they're not yours, they're mine. You have no control over this. These all belong to me. They are not your possessions. They're not your tax pool. They're not your soldiers. They all belong to me because they aren't the ones who defeat and win your battles. God is. They aren't the ones who pay your taxes and increase your wealth. God is. If you want to count, count the one that is. One. What do you have? I've got one. He's up there. Well, actually, he's everywhere. But there's one. That's all the number you need. You don't need any more than that. Let him deal with the others. And that was David's error and that when you count, when you name, you take possession of, as if you control. Don't. So when God says, when you count people, don't count people, you count the coins, what are you controlling? The coins, not the people. And what do you say with the coins? Well, use them for your expenses and the things you need for the tabernacle and yada, yada, yada. That's the function for them. That you control, it was given to you to use, so use it. But don't count them, they're not yours. They belong to God. Make sense? The nature of census. Now, I'm not discussing or disparaging our government's decision to count human beings every 10 years in our own government. That's between them and God, not me. That's their problem. I won't take responsibility for their error. That's their decision. That's their whatever. But that's the details. Okay. Let's move forward because there's other things I want to talk about today. Let's go to jump to, I'm going to skip most of chapter 2 of Exodus. Oh, I have to go back. I'm in the wrong book. I moved to Exodus. Go back to Numbers. So chapter 2 discusses the encampments for us. Who goes where? You're Reuben, Judah, Simeon, Dan. We're discussing those details right now. We discussed them previously. We'll discuss them again probably sometime later. Jump to the tail end of chapter 2, verse, let's see here. Verse 33, says the Levites of chapter 2, the Levites were not counted among the children of Israel as Jehovah commanded Moses. The children of Israel did everything that Jehovah had commanded Moses. So they encamped according to their banners. This, by the way, how they were all encamped and arranged. So they journeyed from every man according to his family by his father's household. I bring this verse up again because this is the second time it's recorded. The children of Israel did according to everything God commanded Moses. Yes, there are only 12 banners. And note, it is, let's see, Judeo-Christian tradition to allocate symbols to each tribe. Like this tribe's symbol is this, that tribe's symbol is that, this tribe's symbol is this. And it's Judeo-Christian tradition to do that. There is nothing in the Torah, anywhere in Tanakh, anywhere in the scripture that says, this tribe's emblem is that thing. People today arbitrarily choose. They choose from various scriptures, Genesis blessings or Chronicles or various. It's just an arbitrary tradition. The tradition of, Dan's a snake. Well, he was also compared to a lion. So why'd you choose a snake? Because Judah had this lion. You couldn't both have lions. They flipped a coin. That's fine. You could have easily just said, well, Dan, okay, his symbol is a Dalet. You could have done a letter. You could have just Dalet Nun, right? I don't think there's, yeah, that just they don't have a Don. But that would have been fine for Dan, sorry. You could have just said, it says Dan on his banner. That's him. That would have worked just fine. You could have just had a color if you wanted to. It doesn't make any difference. The point is, we don't know what the banners are. They are arbitrarily chosen. And if you go to synagogue from this country or this town or that town, they have their own version up. Because nobody agrees. They're artistic interpretations. Yeah, there's artistic interpretations, which I think wrong with them. But that doesn't allocate who the person actually is. Now, you can argue the blessings and all that stuff, but that has nothing to do with their banners. Their banners are just who identifies them. It could have been a color, it could have been a letter, it could have been a whole name, could have been a symbol, who knows? We're discussing all those details today. But I want to point out, this is the children did everything according to what God commanded Moses. They did everything. Actually, I won't have to write it down. So what all did God command them to do with Moses? Well, the Ten Commandments are commanded, right? This is the second year out. So they've had 1 year, they're in their second year now. They've received the Ten Commandments. They've received a lot of things, have gone through in their life cycles. Some people have lived and some people have died over the past year as they've been accumulating people and decreasing and life has been happening over time. The important thing is they did everything that God commanded Moses. Why is that? When God promised Moses to pull them out of Egypt, he said, they're going to believe in you. Not in me. Not in God, in you, Moses. I'm going to make them believe in you, Moses. We, in Christian tradition, what? You don't believe in a man? Well, God commanded, yes, you will. And how, what does that mean to us? It means when we believe in Moses, we believe the Torah is right, because he's the one who delivered it to us. We got it through him. So we believe in him means we believe what God commanded. The words God gave through Moses to us, we believe them. That's an important foundational principle for all Judeo-Christian beliefs. It doesn't matter what your flavor is. If you don't believe in Moses, that means you don't believe in the Torah, which means you don't believe in the words from God. Does that make sense? So they're following Moses. They believe in Moses, which means you believe in the Torah, which means you believe in God, and that is what you're following, is a way of life. They are choosing, the people choosing to live according to the way which they believe, which is in Moses, which is the Torah. They're following God's instruction. That's the principle behind it. Everybody should follow that principle, because God said, I'm going to have you then believe in you, Moses. You're the one they're going to believe in. Did they believe in God? Trick question. They believe in God. Don't answer this. Did they believe in God? So, well, yeah, they believed in God. Really? How many times did they doubt him? All the time, didn't they? Again and again and again. Oh, I believe in him, but he won't do that. He can't do that. Oh, there isn't enough food. A quail, that's not enough quail. Oh, what would he eat? Another manna, what's that? The believing in includes the not believing that he can't do it. You can't believe that, you know, he's not capable of that practice. It's too much for him. Well, that's not believing in God, is it? So, did they believe in God? Sometimes. Did they believe in Moses? Yes. How do we know? When they complained, who'd they go to? Moses. So who'd they believe in? Moses. So God knew ahead of time, I know people, I know humans, I know what they're going to do. I'm doing all these miracles, they're going to believe in you. Not the big flashy stuff that I'm doing. The big, the party of the Red Sea, the plagues, the big mountain with the burning, that they'll see all that. They won't believe in that. What are they going to do? They'll believe in you most, because they'll go to you for every complaint they have. They're all going to you because they think you can solve it. They believe in you, Moses. Now, has God complained about that? Actually, sometimes he does. Yes.
Yeah, I was just thinking. He said, when they were, they're not rejecting you, they're rejecting me. So how does that fit with that?
There's no difference because they're complaining at Moses. That Moses, you're a failure. And God's reassuring Moses, it's not that you're a failure at all. They're rejecting me, and that they're not following the instructions of the Torah that I have given through you to them to follow. We run across that in the Korah's Rebellion. It's a great example, which we'll get there in the section of Korah, named after him. It's a few weeks. There it is. It's like chapter number 17 or 16 or 17. It proves quite clearly who they're complaining about and who they greatly dislike. They complain about Moses. You're incompetent. You're a failure. We're better than you. Get out of here. We knew better than this. They're all addressing Moses. Everything is addressed to Moses. They rarely ever, I don't think any ever, go to God and say, God, you're a failure. No one ever goes around Moses. They go to Moses. And sometimes Aaron, but usually Moses and Aaron. But they go to Moses and Aaron. They're the ones they complain to, and they're the ones they go to for all their problems and issues and needs and complaints and more complaints and more complaints. It's always to Moses. And Moses, as a recipient of all these things, he's a man. You and I are men. We have issues. You can only take rejection and anger and angst over and over and over again. Eventually, it wears you thin. You get a little touchy at times, right? Well, the Moses saying, you know, with the rock and all that story thing, it gets a little touchy. So clearly, there's an issue with Moses. He's a man. But God's pointing out, Moses, it's not you. Yeah, you're the one they're going to, but it isn't really you. It's me they're upset with. To reassuring Moses. Yeah, they didn't pay much attention to what they were actually doing. Okay, let's move on. So let's jump to chapter 3. I'm running a little later than I expected. Let's see here. In chapter 3, we already briefly touched on this a little while ago. It discussed the counting of the Levi. I mentioned before they go from a firstborn from 1 month old and up as what they count. And Levi is not distinguished by those who go out to war. Clearly, a month old is not going to go out to war. There's no distinction, no indication. The Levite doesn't count the lame and the elderly as well. It implies that as far as all male Levites were counted from month old, up and old. It doesn't matter if you were sick, an invalid, whatever, you were still counted anyway. Now, the purpose of that counting, of course, was the firstborn. So in Numbers 3, chapter 11, Yehovah spoke to Moses, saying, "Behold, I have taken the Levites from among the children of Israel in place of every firstborn, the first issue of the womb among the children of Israel, and the Levites shall be mine. For every firstborn is mine. On the day I struck down every firstborn in the land of Egypt, I sanctified every firstborn in Israel for myself, from man to beast, they shall be mine. I am Yehovah." And of course, they went counting all of them up in verse 14. So Jehovah spoke to Moses, the wilderness of Sinai, saying, "Count the sons of Levi, according to their father's household, according to their families. Every male from 1 month age and up, you shall count them." Moses counted them according to the word of Jehovah, as he commanded. And I'm going to go through all the sons of Levi, the sons of Gershon, and all the various families and month old and such. It winds up being 22,000. Number of every male, that's verse 20. Where's the total? Verse 39 says, "All accounted Levites, which Moses and Aaron counted by the word of Jehovah, according to families, every male from 1 month age and up, were 22,000. Now, he did that in order to match the number of firstborns. So Levi has 22,000, and the firstborn amongst Israel is 22,273. So they're very, very similar, but not quite the same number. So as a result, the excessive 273 are firstborn here. They had a 5-shekel fee. I don't know. What's the symbol for shekel? Do you remember? Do these the U.S. dollar symbol for shekel? I can't remember. Whatever. It's not really a dollar sign, but it's basically $5 more, give or take, for each additional male that was counted be of the firstborn. Okay, let's move forward. Okay, now let's go to something a little bit more interesting, in my opinion. I'm not going to go through all the details of the Levites yet, as far as where they lived and their tasks and such. Why is God counting them? What's the reason for him counting? Count things you like. You could argue that. Play eraser. There it is. So we had discussed when David counted. What's the idea of counting? The idea of like ownership. It belongs to me and such. Does God really need them counted? I mean, does God not already know the number of heads there are? I mean, seriously. They say, "Oh, well, you have to count me. I forgot the number." Go ahead, Jeff.
Perhaps it creates a baseline for what's to come.
Interesting point, which is what we're going to discuss up. That's where we're headed. Correct. So he didn't cheat. He just, he knows the Bible pretty well. So he's counted the 605, 3,000, sorry. 550. He also the 22,000 from Levi. And this is Israel. So all these different people, they have their function. There is a purpose to God's counting. It is not for his own benefit. He doesn't need counting. Who needs counting? Humans, men do. And why do we do that? To allocate resources. And we could debate what resources they are, whether they're allocating to me as the tax receiver or allocate to you as what I'm going to give you for benefits or lack thereof or whatever I want to do. Allocate my military resources or whatever I want to do. It's resource allocation. That's what it really does. It doesn't matter what the resource is, whether receiving or giving. It's always a resource allocation. I have 5 children. What value is that? Well, I know how many beds I need to order or buy, right? And how much food I have to supply them each day. There's a use for this. Well, this child eats X amount. We'll multiply it all out. Okay. It's allocating of resources. That's what we do with it. We allocate resources with that number. So allocating these numbers, and the whole purpose of whatever we're using here for the extra doesn't matter in today's lesson. But allocate resources. What is the resource that gets allocated. Manna, that's interesting. God decides how much manna there is. You'd think he'd figure that out ahead of time. So resource. S-E? C-E. I'll read it. Thank you. I'm a terrible speller. All right, so resource. What resource? Toilets. Hopefully not toilets. Now, we understand our resources are broken up into food and water, clothing, and shelter. Now, who supplies the food? In this case, God. In the form of manna, quail, meat, whatever. Who supplies their clothing? God. It didn't wear out. Right? Their shoes didn't wear out for 40 years, right? Who supplied their shelter? God. He's the cloud over them, so God. So, what resources are being allocated? Whatever they are, they're all God's resources. He's the one who's allocating them. So why do the men need to know the count? Ah, this is why. Let's go to revealing why. Yeah, no, that's not the question. So let's jump to, we'll go there. Well, I'm going to jump right. There's like 6-7 scriptures here. I'm going to jump through. I'm going to rearrange the order as I'm flying by the seat of my pants in this one. Galatians chapter 3. Galatians chapter 3 discusses a certain concept that is heavily discussed in a physical form in the book of Genesis. Actually, yes, we'll do this. We're both places. Galatians chapter 3, verse 26 first. We'll go there first. We'll jump to Genesis 15. So Galatians chapter 3, verse 26 through the first 7 verses to 4. I happen to like this scripture because I jump to it all the time. Galatians 3, verse 26. For you are all sons of God through faith in Christ Jesus. For as many of you were baptized into Christ and put on him, Christ, there is neither Jew nor Greek, there is neither slave nor free, neither male nor female, for you are all one in Christ Jesus. And if you are Christ, then you are Abraham's seed and heirs according to the promise. Now I say that an heir, as long as he is a child, does not differ at all from a slave, though he is master of all, but is under guardians and stewards until the time appointed by the father. Even so we, when we were children, were in bondage under the elements of the world. But when the fullness of time had come, God sent forth a son, born of a woman, under the law, to redeem those who were under the law, that we may receive the adoption as sons. And because you are sons, God has sent forth the Spirit of his Son into your hearts, crying out to Abba, Father. Therefore, you are no longer a slave, but a son, and if a son, then an heir of God through Christ. So, there's one other reason for counting that isn't these three. What's the fourth one? Inheritance. Inheritance. What are you an heir of? God's kingdom. And as a child, you have a resource allocated to you for your food, clothing, shelter. That's your flesh and blood. That's those things are needed. But to be an inheritor, to receive something, that's different. What are the Israelites going to end up going? Where is their destination here in Moses' story? The promised land, right? And then when they get there, what do? They have to go to war to conquer it, but they receive territory, don't they? Space. A section allocated for them. Their own stuff, their own life, their own genealogy as time goes on from generation to generation, what belongs to them. That is an inheritance, what they're going to receive as an heir. Now, as an heir of these things, the resource, the allocation resources, the important thing counting in this case, I will say, and I'm going to discuss this back to this with a lot more verses, it has to do with the other purpose of counting, is to inherit. What is allocated to this tribe or this family? What's allocated to that family or that tribe? And where are they going to live? How are you going to live? What's your destination? That's the other purpose of counting. Not that God needs the number, but that God has us count the number so that we know these borders belong to this person, that from this border belongs to that person. We have an inheritance. Yes, Daniel.
So the 12 tribes each got a portion of the land, but it wasn't the whole land that was divided up.
No. The whole land was
so
not, the
whole land was not. Did they understand that the rest of the land is going to somebody else, like the Gentiles?
We're discussed there again. We'll just get there. We're not there yet. You're still ahead of me. You have to wait. Be patient. We'll get there. So before we get to that topic, we're going to jump to a few other things. So what's going to jump to? I'm going to jump to the Haftorah portion. It's just a small section of it. I'm not going to read the whole thing. But jump to Hosea chapter 1, verse 10 and 11. This has to do with a, because as you just pointed out, the whole thing wasn't divided per se, but land is bigger than the people they have. You have certain people, the globe is fairly good size, right? It's not a small little snippet of, the earth is big, and the tribes are relatively small compared to the whole size of the earth. Well, but tribes grow, right? Generations get more. You can add them up. Adam and Eve were two. How many are now? Billions. So two goes to billions. It happens. We understand. Families grow. People grow. They increase. They populate more. Hosea chapter 1, verse 10, it says, "Yet the number of the children of Israel shall be as the sand of the sea, which cannot be measured or numbered. It shall come to pass, in the place where it was said to them, 'You are not my people,' there it shall be said to them, 'You are sons of the living God.' And the children of Judah and children of Israel shall be gathered together and appoint themselves one head. They shall come up out of the land, for great shall be the day of Jezreel." So we have in this story here, what are we learning here? The more that cannot be measured or numbered. So the increased density, they're too big to fit in the space allocated for the tribe or territory of Israel that Moses and Israel are going to conquer or take over. It shall be, as it verse 10, the tale of verse 10 says, you become the sons of the living God. Ah, remember we just read in Galatians. What does that mean? You are an heir, an inheritor of God. So if you're son of the living God, you're an inheritor of all your other brothers and sisters and siblings, right? We all inherit through that process. So the children of Israel will be that many. We'll continue on with this. Yes, Sean.
I'm probably jumping the gun again. But what about the inheritance of a promise that's given in Revelations 7:15 through 17?
Yeah,
therefore, there shall be, therefore, there before the throne of God and serve him day and night in the temple. And he who sits on the throne will shelter them with his presence. They shall hunger no more, neither thirst any more. The sun shall not strike them, nor any scorching heat. For the Lamb is in the midst of the throne, and he will shepherd them. And he will guide them to springs of living water, and God will wipe away every tear from their eyes.
Which that is the inheritance, but inside the Jerusalem territory, right? What do you do when you're outside of it? Let's say I'm Joe Schmo. I live outside the wall. So here's a big wall. Look, there's a city inside. That'd be nice to go inside. I don't live inside there. I live out here because I'm a flesh and blood person. Like I can, ouch, I bleed, kind of thing, right? Where do I live? What is my inheritance? You're absolutely right. What you just read was dead right because you don't, when you're a spirit being, you can dwell inside there, and you're there, that is your dwelling place. When you're not a spirit being yet, what is your inheritance? Do you remember? the work to gold. What is the inheritance of it, though? What is your objective, and how do you live? Any idea?
So, a side note from what you're saying, man, but I'm just trying to do the next right thing and have grace and mercy when I foul up. Let me just say that much.
Oh, yeah, that's normal. We expect the scripts. We're discussing the topic of life and what the inheritances are because there's more than one type. There's one type of inheritance when you're dead, you're a spirit being. You don't need food. You don't need clothing. You don't need those things. You don't need shelter. Your spirit, right? You're dead. What inheritance do you need? We need God. God is your inheritance. Well, what happens when you're not dead yet? You still need God, but you need the material things too. You still need to survive because God doesn't want his creation destroyed. He wants it to live, as he discusses in Isaiah, it returns to a state where all the child plays with among the vipers and all that stuff. Because, well, a child is a flesh and blood thing, you know, poke. And it says, if someone dies at 100, they're like a child, they're too young, something must have gone wrong. So it basically returned to what it would be more akin to what Adam and Eve lived like. As far as the animals, they, you know, 1,000 years age, whatever, however long it would be, I don't really know. It doesn't really matter. The point is, their flesh and blood will extend, and they will not be worried about death and misery in that form, but they still have to consume food and still live and still have, ooh, I cut myself, how do I fix my bandage? Things like that will still happen. Those things are still part of our inheritance, which is, it is a spiritual inheritance when you're dead. But when you're not dead, it's still a physical inheritance that he allocated toward territory and space. And that's what the prophets discuss. The prophets discuss most of the physical inheritance of allocation of land and space, while the New Testament focuses mostly on spiritual inheritance of dead people, which is fine. Both of them are correct. But the spiritual inheritance of dead people goes when you're dead, applies when you're dead, and to get there, which is the goal. But before you're dead, you're not dead yet, you're still alive. So there's two types of inheritances that we're discussing here today. Not just the spiritual one, with the physical one too. The spiritual one, you're absolutely right, is what you just read, Sean. That is the inheritance of God is your inheritance. You belong, that is what you attach to, which is the goal. And that's just fine. But there's more to it than just that, because I'm not dead yet. I don't know when I'm going to die. Hopefully a long, 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 long time from now. But who knows? We'll discuss. That's his choice. So let's move forward and continue on this discussion of God's numbers, that people be as the sands of the sea. Let's jump to Jeremiah 16. Jeremiah 16 discusses a similar topic. I'm going to read a few verses here. Verse 14, the end of the chapter. Jeremiah 16, verse 14 says, therefore, behold, the days are coming, says Jehovah, it shall no longer be said, the Lord lives, who brought up the children of Israel from the land of Egypt. But Jehovah lives, who brought up the children from the lands of the north and from all the lands where he should have driven them, for I will bring them back into their land, which I gave to their fathers. Stop. So he is going to bring the people back from all over the place. And back to the inheritance of the land he swore to their fathers. And who were their fathers? And then we're reading about them in the Torah portion. You know, we had a whole bunch of names and some counting. Those the fathers he's referring to, as well as to Abraham and Isaac and Jacob, the ones who preceded him. Let's go on to verse 16. Behold, I'll send many for fishermen. Sorry, I will send for many fishermen, says Jehovah. They shall fish them, and afterward I will send for many hunters, and they shall hunt them from every mountain and every hill, out of their holes, out of the rocks. For my eyes are on all their ways. They are not hidden from my face, nor is their iniquity hidden from my eyes. And first I will repay double their iniquity for their sin, because they have defiled my land, they have filled my inheritance with the carcasses of their detested abominable idols. So, these people who have been scattered, he's going to haul them all back. They're going to pay for it. They weren't scattered arbitrarily. They're going to scatter. Bring them all back. And as Hosea says, to be counted for the number of the sand, there'll be too many to count. There'll be too many of them being brought back as to receive the inheritance that he brought their fathers. Jonathan.
I had a question. So when Yeshua was talking to his disciples and saying that he was going to make them fishers of men, was he referencing
this
Jeremiah,
verse.
This verse? And so
this is the verse he's
referencing. They were going to be going to the children of Israel.
Yeah, scatter out. They're going to scatter out and be fishers of those men. That's the purpose of it. He was referencing this section of Jeremiah, becoming fishers of men. I'm going to have you fish men out to go find them. That's what he's doing. And what did each of us learn about ourselves when we said, oops, our lives are a wreck, God help me? We realized what he's pointing out here, our iniquities aren't hidden from our God. We just got fished. You were just hooked. When you realize my iniquities aren't hidden from God, you've just been hooked. You were caught. And now what? Now what? Now that I've been caught, I've been hooked. I now dangle on the fishing line. You got me, God. You found me. I was swimming in the dark depths. You couldn't see me, but guess what? You found me anyway. I made the realization. I now realize I'm not actually hidden from you. Now what? God says, ah, now I'm going to return you back to the land, to the inheritance I gave to your fathers. I'm reeling you in. I'm bringing you back now. That's what it is. What is this inheritance we're receiving? Him, and it's life. It's true life, not in the depths of the ocean where we're hiding, but up and out where we can see and be observant and walk around and live to be with God. That's the objective. That's the inheritance where our goal is. This counting of God has these counting numbers and counting of Book of Numbers has to do with knowing where you all are. Who's his and where they're all scattered. How many of us live in Israel? Zero. I live here. I actually live next town north of me. But God didn't lose me because I got hooked also. We all got hooked. He caught us. Yes.
Dancing with Christine Knuckles.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
With I could not find my way all the way to you. Thank you, God, for finding your way to me.
Your way to me, right? You found the...
That's such incredible
You found
words.
Me. So let's move forward. There's some more stuff here we're going to talk about. So the inheritance we're receiving is both a spiritual one, as John had accurately pointed out, to bringing us back into God. There's also the inheritance referred here in Jeremiah that brought to your forefathers. And Hosea says, you'll be as numerous as sands of the sea, which the sand of the sea, by the way, is a quote from the book of Genesis, that God had promised Abraham, you cannot count your descendants. They'll be as the stars of heaven, the sands of the sea beyond number. So Hosea is saying, when this happens, that prophecy that God gave to Abraham will be fulfilled, meaning you will truly be not countable. There's too many to count. Yes.
Is this my assumption is this during the thousand-year reign when Jehovah steps his foot on the Mount of Zion?
Timing I'm not discussing today, but yes. But I'm not talking to timing today. I'm not discussing that part of it,
though. I'm just saying, because this world don't want to listen to it.
So let's move to our... one more step. We have two more iterations to go through, two more steps to go through. The next we're headed to is Daniel's comment before about when we first started out. I may not be a biological descendant. What tribe I found with tribes were mixed up of mixed multitudes of that nature. Let's go to Ezekiel 47. Discusses that particular topic because that is a real question. So Ezekiel 47 discusses some of these details in the nature of the inheritance being brought back. What are you receiving? What are the things you're receiving? What is mine? What is not mine? What am I responsible for? What am I not responsible for? Ezekiel 47 discusses this topic. In Ezekiel 47, we're going to jump to verse 21, the last end of that chapter, discusses this precise topic. It discusses... By the way, Ezekiel 47 is discussing the boundaries of the land, territories, and all divvied up, who owns what, who lives in what section, what territory, what town, all that kind of stuff. And Ezekiel 47, 21 discusses those others. Thus you shall divide this land among yourselves according to the tribes of Israel. It shall be that you will divide it by lot as an inheritance for yourselves and for the strangers who sojourn among you and who bear children among you. They shall be to you as native born among the children of Israel. They shall have an inheritance with you among the tribes of Israel. And it shall be that in whatever tribe the stranger sojourns, there you shall give him his inheritance, says Jehovah our God. So does it matter if I belong to Reuben or I'm a descendant of Edom, of Esau? No. If I got hooked by that fish, whatever tribe I say, hey, I want to bond to that one, it says it's yours. Except, leave it as get inheritance. Leave it as get land. You'll get to bond to Levi. That is true, but leave it as get land. So does it matter what tribe I came from? Sorry, what descendant I came from? Does it matter if I came from Egypt or an Egyptian? No. What does matter who do I choose to sojourn with? Then you are now equal to them. Your inheritance is the same. Does it matter if I'm Jewish? No. Do I choose to follow the tribe of Judah? Guess what? You're now Jewish. Does it matter if I'm from Ephraim? No. But I like Ephraim. Guess what? You're now Ephraimite. You can switch. Because it doesn't matter. Until the inheritance is given, then you can't switch. Once it's given, it's given. But the point is, it doesn't make a hill of beans the difference where you came from. It matters who these tribes, this here, which tribe you chose to dwell with. There's your inheritance. It's simple as that. It doesn't matter if you're Gentile or otherwise. Once God hooked you, you're now hooked. Once he caught you with his fish hook, you're his. It doesn't matter which one you wish to attach yourself to. That is your choice. You choose on which tribe you attach yourself to. That is your decision. Ezekiel 47. Well, it says, it shall be that whatever tribe the stranger sojourns, verse 23, they should give his inheritance. Whatever tribe...
connected to begin with?
Whatever tribe you sojourn with. So if you will have chosen to
sojourn
with the tribe...
You were the servant of Dan or whatever.
Well, whatever tribe you sojourn with, that's the one you're connected to. That is your inheritance. Even if you wandered in, it makes no difference. Oh, I wouldn't know. I had no clue what tribe I sojourn with. I'll find out when he has all the fish separated. He said, hey, all these fish look alike. Okay, I must be among them. I don't even know. At sorting time, I don't know. That's not my business. Who the sorting process works, I don't know. But that's what's the nature of it. The whole point is to inherit this. Yes.
Mm-hmm. That was his, that he's sharing with us.
Which we got from, we read in Galatians. We read that precise thing is the nature of the adoption. We were adopted through this process. So we belong to him. So his, the inheritance, whether you allocate, whether it's this tribe or that tribe, makes no difference. You belong, you were adopted. So now you, those sojourning process, that what have you sojourn with? Because you've been hooked. You recognize your iniquities aren't hidden from God. You are hooked. You are received. You now belong to him. Well, now it's a matter of that you got that process. You got there by being hooked. How'd you get hooked? There's only one bait. Right. There's one bait. It was him. He was the bait. He was the fish. He's the worm on the end of the hook. Or whatever, you know, the fly. That's how you got hooked. That's the process, but you got hooked. That's how it was. Simple, right? It's a simple analogy. That's the nature of it, right? That's what we learn our receiving of how these inheritances, how this process is supposed to work. So our inheritance in land and space and time and physical inheritance while we're alive, that's a real thing. That's a real thing, not an allegory. That's a real thing. Ezekiel discussed that more in great detail about people coming up on a regular basis for healing and for nature, for all the seasons. And Zechariah discussed this, the sea coming up, all the holy days of flesh and blood coming back and forth. These are inheritable things. When you pass on, when you're dead, the inheritance moves inside the city. The spiritual, it's inside instead of the outside. Yes, Jeff.
When you're talking about hooking fish, it just reminds me of the times put out fishing. And the fun part, you know, especially when you're out like halibut fishing, is you don't, since you know their topside is camouflaged, you can't see them until they're up near the surface. And like sometimes you're reeling the thing up and you don't know how big it is until it rolls over and it's white side. And then suddenly say, oh my goodness, this thing's huge. And the big ones you really have to worry about, because when they get up to the surface and they see you, they just like one little snap and they're off the hook and they're gone. So it's one of those things, kind of an interesting metaphor that when you're fishing and you're the fish, do you eventually give up fighting to be
That's
brought
true.
Into
That's
the boat?
Interesting.
Because
point.
At the last minute, you could say, oh, there he is.
This.
I'll try one last effort to get free.
Uh-huh.
And there you go. If you try hard
point.
Enough, bam, you can get free.
I hadn't thought about that. That is a good point. I lost a few fish that way. Yes, Larry.
said that we're going into the walled towns. Is that why it sounds like the Jubilee? And they said a Jubilee doesn't relate to the people that are in walled towns.
Right. The inheritance does not transfer. Once you're inside and you are there, it is permanently yours. The inheritance cannot transfer. Jubilee does not apply to inside a walled city. So if you go inside Jerusalem, that is your dwelling place, it's permanently yours. It can never be taken away. That's the inheritance rules that God set up, Jubilee. You cannot take it away. Once you made it inside, it is now yours. You're already dead. That's it. You don't worry about the flesh. There's no draw to evilness because there's no flesh and blood in you. There's nothing there. So you've made it inside. It is now always yours. It doesn't matter if you travel out to go talk to people, friends, family, whatever. It's always yours. Yes.
With the scripture that when Yeshua said, "Who the Father has given me, no one can snatch them from my hand."
Correct. Because he already reeled them in. Here, it's yours. You already reeled them in. Okay, let's see. I'm going to end our last verse. I'm running a little bit later than I planned. That's okay, though. Last verse, we end in Romans 8, verse... Where is it? Okay, Romans 8, verse 12. Therefore, brethren, we are debtors not to the flesh to live according to the flesh. For if you live according to the flesh, you will die. But by the Spirit you shall put to death the deeds of the body which you will live. For as many are led by the Spirit of God, these are the sons of God. For you did not receive the spirit of bondage again to fear, but you received the spirit of adoption, by whom we cry out, Abba, Father. The spirit bears witness with our spirit that we are children of God, and if children, then heirs, and heirs of God, and joint heirs with Christ, if indeed we suffer with him, that we also be glorified together. For I consider that the sufferings of this present time are not worthy to compare with the glory which shall be revealed in us. For the earnest expectation of the creation eagerly waits for the revealing of the sons of God. The whole purpose of everything that we do, everything God created, all creation, it's one function. It's only anticipation. It's only desire. Is to reveal the sons of God. Who are they? Who inherits? Who doesn't inherit? Who receives? Where are these individuals? Who are these people? That's what the creation seeks. The inheritance that God gives and all the counting and all the this person, that person, land and territory, firstborn, whatever. The whole objective is to reveal who belongs to God. What fish got hooked and didn't fight back? Who got reeled in all the way? Those are the ones that all creation is waiting for to identify who they all are. From generation to generation, every generation, they get picked and fished and collected. And they receive their inheritance. Whether it's going to be a spiritual one because they perish prior to the end of time for God's counting cycle, or it's a physical one because they're not dead yet and they continue on living, it's still an inheritance. And the objective is to reveal the sons of God. That is who the heirs are, the receivers are, the inheritors are, those sons of God. And it makes a hill of beans of difference which tribe you're from, what your genetic connection is or isn't. Whatever you sojourn with, that's yours. And God is the only one who knows that name or those numbers. Right? Any questions or comments regarding this Torah portion? The counting of numbers, the purpose of being counted, or why God counted stuff? One more count to go. Well, the counting... many people have counted the people of Israel at various times in history, you will note distinctly that after King David's count, the following subsequent counts were insufficient, meaning that they were small, because they counted only a tribe, or half a tribe, or three quarters of a tribe, or maybe two tribes, not all of them. After God scattered them, no human can count them again. It's not physically, conceivably, or even possible in any way. It's not possible because I have no clue where they all went, and nobody else does either. Which, who married what family, what generation they came from, how many generations it's been, blah, blah, blah. No one knows. It's all impossible to count now. It truly is like sand to the sea. Even if I tried to count, you know, a beach, give me a bucket of sand, I'll be all my whole life. Well, give me a whole beach. Well, how many beaches are there? How big is the globe? Can you count them? No, you can't. You're dreaming. You can imagine numbers. That's all we can imagine. They could be off by 1,000,000%. Who knows? Yes, Jeff.
Well, I think 7 decades ago, someone did try to count and to lessen that count, and that did not go well for the one who tried that.
7 decades ago, 70 years ago. Oh, right. Right. 75 now? Yeah. He tried to count. He tried to shrink the count by a few million, and he did. But yeah, it was a particular tribe that he was counting. Any other questions or comments? Why the rounding of these numbers? Okay, so I am not an accountant, but Jewish accounting is fairly well known. So we round numbers. In the case of, for example, we have Levi and we have the firstborn. Levi happens to be 22,000. The firstborn is 22,273. This number clearly is not rounded, is it? That's clearly precise. And we have numbers, so he multiplies by 5 shekels per person to offset it. So we can debate the nature of rounding and what that actually means. But I can't swear what it truly means. I can't give you a confirmed number. Some argue it's not rounded. These just happen to be these exact numbers. That is totally conceivably possible. But I want to point one thing out to those people and those individuals is that this number here in Book of Numbers is the same exact number that happened a year earlier of 603,550. Individuals that happen in Exodus 1 year earlier when they were building, getting the stuff for the tabernacle, all the sockets, the silver sockets that they made for the tabernacle posts, those are all made with the silver from the counting, was the exact same number a year earlier. But a year earlier, it included Levi. But this time it does not. So in the year from 1 year, from here to here, they at least gained 22,000 males were born in that year, or reaching the age of 20 or thereabouts. So we have, there is a number increase. The fact that the exact same number is highly, highly suspicious, that I question that. I don't know if that's necessarily what rounding truly happened. My opinion is, it is the exact same census, or it's a coincidence, or somebody altered numbers. But those are all speculations. So there's no way of knowing for certain about rounding. God knows exact numbers. So it's very possible God may have purposefully wanted them to round off. So exact numbers could not be determined. That very well could be. Because if you're rounding off, you really don't have a true count. You have an estimate now. The estimate you don't have that's close enough. You didn't actually get a true census then, did you? So God may have intended them to round, so they wouldn't have exact dead number on everything. But I don't know. It's a speculation only. Any questions or comments? Yes.
Yeah, thinking about, I would almost have to draw this out to make the point. But when people are asking here about what tribe might I be descended from, or blah blah blah. Chances are everybody in this room might be descended to some degree or another from all of them. And if I can draw and I can kind of show you why.
Go ahead. Come on up here. I'll get you a marker. Where's the marker? Here you go. go ahead. Our guest illustrator.
Your guest genealogist. Okay. So if you think about, let's pretend this would be my family tree or any human being's family tree. You have Adam, right? We all come from Adam. And for a while, it branched out. But then there was this guy named Noah, right? So while there were all these descendants coming down, but then when the flood happened, everyone got wiped out except for Noah's family. So every human being in this room is descended from one of three lines of Noah, and then we have Abraham, etc., right? But then if you wanted to come back down to me, so there you are at the end of it, me. So as you have parents, grandparents, and so on, those numbers go exponentially. So all of our family trees basically look like a triangle. They do not branch like a tree forever. So am I a descendant of Judah? Probably. Am I a descendant of Gad? Probably. Am I a descendant of Shem? Probably. Am I a descendant of Japheth? Probably. So when it comes in the last days, where are we going to end up going? Anywhere we want.
Right.
And God will probably just put his rubber stamp on it and we'll all be good.
Yeah. Fair enough. Any questions or comments? Yes, Larry.
Oh, I was going to say that 22,000 of Levites and then ransoming the 273 makes it sound like those maybe were not, they may have been precise.
Those may have been precise. I do not know.
What Messiah said, what is impossible with man is possible with God.
Right. And that counting implies very clearly it probably was precise. Because otherwise, 273 they wouldn't round that off to lose the 273. It would make sense. How they did that, I don't know. If I randomly took a sample of population, there's no way I would end at that many zeros. A random sample doesn't do that. But God, anything's possible. So God may have said, I have this exact number. This is what it is, and then it's done. I do not know. I don't know. 20,000 Oh, that's a good question. I don't know. I don't know. Where 20,000 Egyptians die if you read... Well, who knows? Who knows? Everyone could be. Yes.
I just think it's fascinating from your drawing there. Starts with one to beyond the sands of the sea back to one.
Because you are a one individual.
We're a God.
Yeah. Always one. All right, we'll conclude the prayer. Almighty God, our great Father, thank you for Shabbat, a day of rest, a time to praise and worship you, Father. Please receive each one of us, that we be yours, your sons, your daughters, your children, your people. Father, we ask you to bless us this day, and we ask you to continue to help us to follow you as best we can, to listen to your timings, your words, your truths. They will live and live well. Please bless us the rest of our Shabbat, Father. We praise you and trust you in Yeshua's name. Amen.
You've been listening to a discussion at Hallel Fellowship. If you would like to hear more discussions or if you have any questions, visit the website at hallel.info. That's hallel.info. Hallel.info.